This is Digital Story Podcast number 847, June 14th, 2022. Today's theme is Cropped Sensors Aren't Going Anywhere, Nor Should They. I'm Derek Story. All right, our female listeners get a pass on this next paragraph. Mine is bigger than yours seems to permeate every crevice of the male psyche. We compare the size of our trucks, houses, paychecks, and practically anything else that can be measured, quantified, or weighed. We even do it with the girth of our lenses and the size of our sensors. And yet, after multiple predictions of their demise, APS-C and Micro Four Thirds are not only still here, but thriving. A closer look on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. Okay, I'd like to invite our female listeners back for the next part of the show and for the remainder of the podcast. Sorry for that, but my gosh, it just feels like that sometimes. This is bigger than that, and this is better than that, and all of that. And sometimes it just makes me wacky. So, for example, let's just use some concrete items here to start this discussion. What do the Canon EOS R7, Fujifilm X-H2S, Canon EOS R10, Nikon ZFC, Sony A6400, OM System OM1, and Panasonic GH6 all have in common? Not one of them is full frame. Not one of these cameras is full frame. Yet, the Canon R7 and R10 and Fujifilm X-H2S are new releases, brand new releases, that we're still waiting to land on the store shelves. The A6400 is going back into production. In other words, because of supply chain, not demand, because of supply chain, Sony had to halt production on the A6400. And then, once they could kind of get things back in order, they're starting it again. They're going to start making them again, which means there is demand for them to do that. The Nikon ZFC suddenly is a golden child, right? First came out, people were going, oh, it looks pretty, but I don't know about its performance. The image quality is good, but it doesn't have this or that. It doesn't have two card slots or whatever. Well, all of that seems to have changed. And everyone loves this APS-C camera. And when I say everyone, I mean most people, right? And as I speak right now, it isn't very easy to get your hands on an OM-1, right? Still, I have people in our workshop, our ongoing workshop, that ordered theirs way back, about the same time I ordered mine, who are just now getting theirs. I mean, it's sort of like ordering an electric car and then just waiting and waiting and waiting and hope that someday, and they say, hey, your order is here, ready to pick up. So those are a few examples of what I'm talking about. If the smaller cropped sensor camera is so inferior to the larger siblings, then why is Canon, Sony, Nikon, Fujifilm, OM System, and Panasonic investing so much in them? This is a tough camera market. You don't invest money, you don't invest R&D in the things that you don't think are going to do well because, well, you know what? It's expensive when they don't. It's very expensive when they don't. I have a short answer for why they're still investing, and that is people like them, right? A lot of people like cropped sensor cameras. First of all, they tend to be smaller and easier to carry around. Okay, not only is the sensor smaller in terms of physical size, but it's also easier to keep cool. It's also easier to do all the surrounding stuff with the sensor. So the cameras are just easier to work with. They're smaller, they're lighter. Generally speaking, I'm sure there are exceptions, but generally speaking, they're smaller, right? But number two, thanks to today's technology, the image quality is fantastic. I mean, I look at the image quality from my X100V or from my Pentax KP, both APS-C sensor cameras, and I just go, I love these cameras and I love these pictures. My OM-1 right now, beautiful, beautiful image quality. I mean, these cameras are terrific. They produce very, very good pictures. So you don't need to have that big sensor to have image quality. There are other things. There are other physics involved. For instance, you know, the little shorter depth of field and things like that. Possibly, depends on the camera, which what you're comparing to what. Better high ISO performance, right? That's another factor. So those things are there. But when we're talking about image quality, how good the picture looks in the kind of lighting that we're using 95% of the time, very, very good. Okay? So that's number two. Today's technology, image quality, fantastic. You get smaller, lighter lenses that still have amazing optical quality. And this is where I think the real savings comes in, right? It's nice to have a smaller camera body, but it's smaller by how much compared to a larger mirrorless full-frame camera? It's smaller, but not like huge smaller. It's just smaller. And huge smaller is a phrase that doesn't really make sense, but I think you know what I mean. Maybe a lot smaller. How about that? Let's go down that road and not try to overly mix our metaphors. Okay, so the body for a crop sensor camera is going to be somewhat smaller, but where you get the real savings is the lenses don't need to be as big to cover that full-frame sensor. And this is what I love so much about Micro Four Thirds, because I can go either way with it. And to some degree, with APS-C as well. I can go with a small lens, right, that's very good optically, and I still can have a maximum aperture of f1.8 or f2 or f2.4. Very nice. If I want to go to 1.4 or 1.2 for that maximum aperture, that's not a problem. Then I have the option of getting a bigger lens, right, bigger glass, more of that stuff. I get those faster maximum apertures, but I pay for it with more bulk. So I have the option. I can choose. In my Micro Four Thirds library, I have lenses, multiple lenses, focal lengths, such as 45 millimeter, 17 millimeter, 25 millimeter. So I have the really fast F1.2s, if I want to use those, and I do use those. But when I'm banging around in nature, I'm pretty happy with the 17 millimeter f1.8, right? I can go either way, and I love that. I love that about this smaller sensor format, okay? So that's number three. You get smaller, lighter lenses, still great optical quality. Number four, they generally cost less. My state-of-the-art Olympus camera was, I think, $21.99, I want to say. $21.99, $2,200. If you get a state-of-the-art Sony full frame or state-of-the-art Nikon full frame, it's going to cost about double. It's going to be twice that much. Now, again, there are things that those cameras do. I understand that. But do I need those things? I personally don't. And I shoot for a living. But if I was shooting the NBA Finals or the World Series or the Super Bowl, yes, I would probably have to go up to that more expensive camera in order to compete with the folks around me. I don't, so I get to save a lot of money. And yes, you know what? Sometimes I do want a little extra depth of field. This is so funny. We always talk about, you know, softening the background and all that sort of stuff. And this is a situation, and I know I've talked about this with my X100V. For a while there, when I first started shooting with it, I was shooting wide open all the time. I was shooting at F2 all the time. And a lot of my shots I couldn't use because there wasn't enough depth of field to go from the smallest place to the smallest place. I was going, darn, I mean, this isn't even a full-frame camera, and I'm screwing up here. So I've had to start stopping down to F4 for a lot of shots that I do with the X100V, with the APS-C camera, in order to to get the amount of depth of field that I need, and then everything's falling off the table after that. Okay, that's fine. I just don't want it to fall off the table from my subject's right eye to my subject's left eye. Okay, I'd like to have both of those, clear. So anyway, so I do like having that little extra depth of field. And where this is really fun is with the Micro Four Thirds cameras. Because, and I've just been through a number of shoots for hire where this paid off. I had the 40 to 150 on there, and that was the lens that I was using most of the time for these shoots. I can shoot wide open with that lens at f/2.8 and not screw up, right? And not screw up. Still have enough depth of field so that if it's a two-person shot, I have both people in focus, which is important on things like graduation photos and stuff. But yet, the background still fell off nicely. And it just was a beautiful safety net that allowed me not to worry about that part of it, and yet at the same time have a beautiful effect on many, many, many of the photos that I took. So sometimes I do like a little bit of depth of field, maybe not the depth of field that the iPhone gives you with that smaller sensor. That's a lot of depth of field. So I don't need that kind of depth of field. I just need that little bit of extra so that my main subjects are sharp and then the background is still pleasing. All right, so those are the five things that I think APS-C and Micro Four Thirds really bring to the table. They tend to be smaller, easier to carry around. Thanks to today's technology, the image quality is fantastic. You get smaller, lighter lenses, but still have amazing optical quality. But you can go with the bigger lenses if you want. They generally cost less. And yes, sometimes I like that little extra depth of field. Now, on pro photo assignments, when I'm standing shoulder to shoulder with my full-frame brothers and sisters, my shoulders get less tired. That's just the way it is. And I get hired just as often as they do, right? I talk to them. I go, hey, have you guys got any gigs lately that I haven't been invited to? Because if so, I want to know. Now, maybe they're just not telling me the truth, but they say no. We're all on the same gigs all the time, so don't worry about it. I believe them. They're good people. Full-frame people are good people, right? Okay, so I'm spending far less on my gear than they are. I know how much those lenses cost and all the stuff that they're using. My shoulders are less tired, and I'm a pretty happy camper. Those are the reasons why those of us who appreciate a crop sensor keep telling manufacturers to keep building these great cameras, to keep updating them, so we can continue to enjoy these benefits. In my opinion, crop sensors aren't going anywhere. I was thinking the other day about how people love to tell me about their favorite podcasts, which I totally appreciate. It's pretty interesting, actually. And it's become kind of a standard topic at family gatherings or when you're hanging out with friends, all that. Sooner or later, it seems like two topics come up. Like, what are you watching on Netflix, right? And what's your favorite podcast? Those questions come up a lot. And they're actually questions I really like, both of them, because I think they're both interesting. And I find out a lot of new podcasts that are fun. And I get to watch new shows on Netflix that I might not have watched otherwise. But I start thinking about this and that we should be telling our friends about this podcast. And I'm going, why haven't we been talking about this? It's available, the Digital Story podcast, it's available on every service that's commonly used, everywhere. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Amazon, Spotify, on and on and on, Podbean, you name it. This podcast is everywhere. It is in the fabric of the podcast internet. It is an RSS feed that is proliferated across the board. So they'll have no problem if they listen to podcasts at all, finding The Digital Story, right? Just tell them to enter that word or my name, and it'll come up. So I had another cup of coffee, and I kept thinking about this. And I was thinking, if each of our regular listeners told just one friend about this podcast, and encourage them to listen, that's some serious numbers, right? That would be kind of fun. And I would love to see this community grow a bit. It gives me more options. It gives me more options in terms of what I do. It allows me to offer more services. It allows me just, you know how it is. It's good. It's good. It's good all the way around. It's good for everyone. So let's try it. Let's tell a friend about the TDS Photography Podcast. Let's make a concerted effort to do it over the next month or two. I mean, do it all the time, honestly. But I was really thinking, let's see if we can do it over the next month or so and actually push those numbers up. I'll keep an eye on things and I'll report back to you and try this with me. I think this will be fun. And if we can actually move that boulder up the hill a little farther, that would feel so good. And believe me, I'll let you know. I'll let you know if we are able to make a difference. And I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to start talking about it more myself. And I really appreciate you participating in this word of mouth promotion. Okay, I'm just going to read the headline on this. I think it's slightly dramatic, but I'm just going to roll with it because it's what they wrote. This is an article that's on Petapixel, and I have the link in the show notes. TikTok is convincing people to scratch their camera lenses with rocks. Honestly, that's the actual headline. Let me read you this. Some photographers on TikTok are trying an unconventional technique for unusual results, taking a rock to the front of their lenses, scratching the glass, and destroying them in the process. Photographer Illuminati posted a video of her using a rock to mortally wound her Canon 50mm f1.8 in response to a viral video made by Andre Videography, where he appeared to be doing the same to his lens. However, Andre didn't actually scratch his lens. Eagle-eyed viewers will notice that he was actually scratching a lens filter placed on his Sony 85mm. Yeah, if he takes a rock to a Sony 85mm, I don't know. He should just take a rock to his head then, right? All right, back to the story. But in Illuminati's case, she actually takes a rock to the front element of her 50mm. Speaking to Petapixel, she explains what happened. Quote, "I saw another person do it with a filter, and my intrusive thoughts told me to try it on the lens for real," she says. "This came up on my for-you page, and as a photographer, I'd never cringed harder in my life," Illuminati says in her TikTok video. "But then I was so curious to see what a photo from that camera would look like that I actually destroyed one of my lenses," she continues. "Then I set it down and got ready to take a couple of portraits, and to my surprise, it actually gave this glow." And she shows some photos there, and they actually look kind of cool. I like them. "I don't recommend doing this to your lenses, but hey, it's kind of cool." All right. When asked by Petapixel, the portrait and fashion photographer seemed to have no regrets over the video. Quote, "I really did scratch it, and the photos were actually not bad at all. The lens is not great in the first place, so I don't think I'd use it," she says. Okay, that's the end of the text in Petapixel. So this just cracks me up. I just love this. First of all, I'm gonna defend the Canon 50mm lens. That is a good lens. I've owned a number of them, and I think they're terrific. I think they're a very good lens. They're fast, they're sharp, they're light. What's not to love with this lens, right? So don't say the lens is no good and justifying scratching it with a rock. Second of all, the first photographer, Andre, right? Andre Videography, he had it right. It is fun to take old filters and do stuff to them. We've smeared petroleum jelly on them, can scratch them up a bit, you know, using a rock if you wish. You can do all sorts of stuff to filters and play with them, especially old UV filters, filters that maybe were replaced by multi-coated versions, you know, stuff like that. That is fun. That is fun. And you can get some really neat results. And so that part of the story, that takeaway, I actually want to remind you to play with old filters, especially for portraits, and you can get some very nice effects. And if you get it just right on a filter, let's say you scratch it up a bit and get it just right, then you've got the filter and you can put it on other lenses and stuff as well. So that part I totally agree with. In terms of actually scratching a camera lens, the only way I would do that is that I have manual focusing lenses that were originally made for film cameras where something doesn't work on them. For example, I have an Ashika 50 millimeter. It's a very nice lens, but the aperture stopped working. So it's shooting wide open all the time it's at f1.9. So kind of a funny maximum aperture, f1.9. So I can only use it wide open. Well, I have other lenses that fit on those same cameras that I can stop down, but I've just kept it around because I just like the lens, right? That would be something that maybe I could play with a bit. Maybe I wouldn't start out with actually rock scratching. Maybe start with a little petroleum jelly or something, or maybe just start with putting the filter on that lens and always shooting wide open. But if I were to mess with a lens, that might be one that I'd do it. And I have adaptors where I can put it on my Micro Four Thirds cameras and then play with it. As much as anything, the story just cracked me up, but it did give me an opportunity to talk about, you know, messing around with filters, scratching them up, putting stuff on them, and then seeing what kind of portrait effects you can get. I know also on TikTok, they're talking about using pantyhose, stretching it over a lens. That's a technique been around for years. Stuff like that's fun. And if you haven't done it for a while, play with it. Just protect your lens in the process, please. Leica announces a $20,000 M-A Titan set featuring titanium film camera and lens. And this is another story that I'm sharing just because, again, it just like blows my mind. It blows my mind. It's cool, but it blows my mind. All right. And you can read the entire article on DP Review. I have a link to it in the show notes. Leica has announced a new limited edition film camera and matching APO Summicron M50 F2 a spherical lens. The Leica MA Titan set is Leica's sixth limited edition camera with titanium exterior. The first titanium exterior Leica was the Leica M6 TTL Titanium released in 2001. The high-end limited MA Titan camera and lens are milled from solid titanium, a material known for its durability. The titanium also gives the MA Titan set a distinct, striking look, and that it does. It is pretty. I'm a sucker for that titanium exterior. I think it looks really nice, and this camera is absolutely beautiful. All right. The Leica MA is purely mechanical camera, relying on no power or data connections. Leica writes that the MA is the epitome of Leica's philosophy to concentrate on the essential, a return to photography in its purest form. It doesn't even include a light meter, unlike the Leica MP. The special edition version includes the classic Leica script on the top of the camera. And then it talks about the lenses. Now we get to where the rubber meets the road here. It doesn't come cheap. The set is limited to just 250 units worldwide and will set you back $19,995. The camera and lens are engraved with special edition serial numbers, and the set comes in a special presentation box lined with black silk. If the idea of a purely mechanical Leica film camera is up your alley, but the MA Titan is too expensive, why, how could that be? You can purchase the Leica MA in black chrome or silver chrome for only $5,965. The Leica MA works with a wide range of Leica M lenses, ranging from 16mm to 135mm. Now, one thing I will say, and this is coming from my film camera shop, that classic feeling mechanical cameras are cool. They are absolutely cool. There is something, and I don't think it's just because that's what I grew up with, right? I think it goes beyond the nostalgia to just to feel something that operates the way these cameras do is really wonderful. So imagine having pretty much the epitome of a film camera, but that was made just now, right? It was just minted. That's kind of neat. And then, of course, having the classic Leica optics, right? They even did a titanium lens hood that comes with the set. I mean, it's pretty neat. It's got a lot of stuff. You know, price aside, right? I mean, we're not talking price. Probably not one person in this audience is going to buy one of these things, or maybe one person in this audience would buy one of these things. And if they did and they had, you know, the budget for it, then I would think, you know, right on, this is cool. This is a beautiful camera. And I hope they would shoot with it and totally enjoy it as well. But I am happy that someone is still making film cameras, right? Even if they are $20,000 or the other ones for $6,000, right? For $6,000. I am happy that they're around. There's been some good news on the film front lately. For a while there, we're just hearing all bad news. These emulsions are being discontinued. Prices are soaring through the roof for film, all that kind of stuff. But now we have a whole new batch of different emulsions that are coming out, and prices seem to have stabilized a bit. There's some new developers coming out. There's like stuff happening that's very positive. So film is kind of alive, and this camera is very fun and just handsome to look at. I'm afraid if I got this camera, I would like have to put it on the nightstand every night and maybe have a little glowing light next to it. So every time I woke up and opened my eyes, that would be the first thing that I'd see. That would make me very happy. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to mention again, if you have been unsubscribed, it is a just sort of a technological, mechanical error that seems to happen to some folks on occasion with the Apple Podcast app. All you have to do is just resubscribe. It's easy. Just hit the subscribe button again. And whenever you think that something's wrong or that there isn't a podcast when there's supposed to be, then you can just go to thedigitalstory.com. If the podcast is there, if the new podcast is there, then it should be with your app. And all you have to do is just like reconnect it. So I just wanted to give you that note. In case you got bounced off, you didn't think that something happened to me, that's the last thing I want you to worry about, okay? Our Inner Circle members, I just want to give you a hats off. I want to give you a big hand. I want to give you a hug some days. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast and this community. Thank you so much for the fun that you're bringing to our new Inner Circle site that's on Derek Story Online. I'm enjoying seeing your pictures. I'm enjoying watching you comment on, you know, other people's pictures. You know, it's whenever you're a teacher or a facilitator or a parent, anyone, you know, that is like bringing people together or trying to keep people together, it's always fun when those people just start interacting with one another. I mean, that is one of the things that just makes my heart glow. It really does. To see, you know, you guys talking with each other, you guys and gals talking with each other and sharing ideas, sharing information, and sharing opinions. Thank you, Inner Circle members, for all of it. Not just for the pledges, but also thank you for your participation. And, you know, your blood is the lifeblood of this community, and you're keeping it vibrant and alive, and I so appreciate that. And finally, I want to give a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These are the folks that just cover it all when it comes to printing. They really do. And printing is such a wonderful endeavor. It is the thing at the end of the day that completes the cycle, the photographic cycle. And what I mean by that, you know, you conceive the shot, you capture the shot, you edit the shot, and then when you print the shot, you have done everything. You have done everything, and you have actually created a physical piece of artwork that you can hand to someone else, that you can give as a gift to someone else, that you can put on your wall, that you can just leave out on a table and let other people come and pick it up, you know, and go, wow, this feels kind of neat. What do you call this stuff? And you go, it's paper. It's neat. It's really neat stuff. And they go, yeah, no kidding. I love this stuff. That's what happens when you make a print. And Red River Paper will help you make the best print possible. All you have to do is click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. Go over there, nose around, get some printing paper, get some other supplies, read some tutorials, and make some artwork of your own that you can show off and be proud of. Red River Paper also has a Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. And a huge thanks to them for supporting the show. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Working on some great stuff for next week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, tell a friend, go take some pictures, stay safe out there. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.